Graphics folks, it's been several years since we've been on the air, and we're very, very glad to be able to bring you the two-hour shows again. It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be very interesting. We've got a slew of new co-hosts, some new people, and some older people that you folks know, and I'd like to introduce those folks. Of course, we have Tom Cantrell. And tonight we have a special guest with Arla, and we also have as co-host Robin Haynes, or Robin Lynn Haynes. I've got to get that middle name in here. I'm going to get myself kicked out.
No, you're fine.
Folks, well, tonight our show, we're going to be talking, you know, of course, Stone Graphics is back on the air. And we're writing again. That's fantastic. But tonight we're going to be talking about the International Conference on Primal People. I believe I've got that correct. So
you do.
I'm going to ask Tom and Arla to kick in there. Me and Robin's going to kind of sit on the sidelines unless we want to ask some questions. If you will, Tom, could you start off and tell us how long this has been and when what it's about?
Okay. In 2012, we had the initial International Conference on Primal People here in the Tri-Cities in eastern Washington, and it was well-attended and well-received. And I don't know how many people have been involved in putting one of these on, but it becomes a chore, you know. There's a lot of work to it. A lot of things go on behind the scenes that the person doesn't see. And I swore I would never do another one again. But I had forgotten to take counsel from my teacher when I said that. And this past winter, he decided we needed another one. So set a date for it, and we arranged for some speakers and. In the middle of that, we found out there's going to be another conference locally here late in the fall. And I looked at Mark's speaker list, and then I looked at their speaker list. And they have, you know, Dr. So-and-so and Professor So-and-so, none of whom have ever seen one of these individuals. Okay? And I looked at our list. There's Miss Arla Collette Williams, Joe Hauser, Keith Bearden, Bob Gimlin, Bob Shoup, and all of these people have lived with them. That's the group we want. Our entire conference is set around people who have lived in proximity with them. The only person who doesn't have face-to-face encounters is our keynote speaker, and he's there because of his expertise in his field. Bill Munns is our keynoter, and he ran the school on how to make suits, how to make costumes. He was a Hollywood special effects costumer since the 1960s. And he did feature films such as Beastmaster, Creature from the Black Lagoon, several of, you know, major motion pictures that the creatures were his creation. So he knows what goes into making a suit. He's also a world-class film analyst. He's appeared on Nat Geo Channel with his mm-hmm. analysis work of the Patterson-Gimlin film. He has several channels on YouTube of analyses. He's spoken nationwide, if not worldwide, on the subject. And we're blessed to have him as our keynote speaker. And when I was talking to him about that, I asked him, you know, what he'd like to address. I'd really like to hear about his you know, expertise with the Patterson-Gimlin film, because, as you know, I spent a great deal of time in defense of that myself. And what we came down to, he says, I'd really like to talk about the myth, the mysteries and the outright lies associated around that film. And talk about why a minute of film has created a half century of controversy. He says, but I might need more than the standard, 50 minutes to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, how about we do it this way? We're going to have a session on Saturday evening. Miss Arla will be starting that, and we'll hear from Mr. Bob Gimlin. And then I said, the rest of the evening is yours until they lock us up and throw us out.
as
you want. Okay, and that's what we're doing.
Let me ask you this.
Saturday night to tell us everything that was truthful and untruthful that's been said about the Patterson-Gimlin film.
We need to talk about that. We really do one of these days. We need to talk. We can't do it tonight.
Yeah, that'll take up all your time.
Yeah. That is something that has been coming from the man itself. You have to believe the man. I mean, he was there. He was the only one there that's left. And
I had someone recently said, I've interviewed all of the participants in that except Bob Gimlin. I looked at him and I said, how did you do that? Roger died in 1972. Bob and Pat are the only other two that were in that canyon. And you haven't talked to Bob. How was your interview with Patty? Did she have much to say? And he didn't like me after that much.
Well, and I've got the actual footage here. Igor left it here. I have that in the trackway footage.
Oh, do you?
I actually do. I was told to preserve it by keeping it in the freezer because it helps to keep the film from falling apart. And I have both the trackway footage and the actual Patty film that Renee had.
Okay.
And I have it here. And I sent Bill Munns a copy of the trackway. And actually part of it had started to fall apart a little bit, but he was able to get a lot of stills off of it. And then I haven't sent him the original Patty one either. But when you do look at these, and you don't just see it, something on Facebook, but when you actually look at this, and you can see the flexing of the muscles, and you can see the degree and the angles in the legs and the thigh muscle move, and just the overall movement, you really can see that this footage is legit. And then when you speak to Bob, and I've only spoken to him one time, it was via Skype, and I found him to have a very high level of integrity, very truthful, very honest. He didn't just tell you what he thought you wanted to hear. I mean, he was entirely believable.
Are you talking about Bob? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, Bob.
Yeah. I can tell you a Bob story, and this came to me from the newspaper reporter on the Yakima Herald newspaper. He did a series of articles, and Bob was working with a fellow on a TV show, answering questions for him and such, and he was explaining the sequence of events about how they rode down and came around the end of this blown down or washed down log and around the root wad. And the phone rang, and it was this fellow's producers in Hollywood. And the guy says, you're not going to believe who I'm sitting here talking with right now, but I'm sitting with Bob Gimlin. They offered Bob, right then, they told the fellow, offer him $1 million cash and we'll have it in his account before he gets home if he'll tell us how he and Roger faked that film. Bob looked him right square in the eye. He says, I'd really like to take your money. I could sure use it. He says, well, what happened was we came around the corner of this root wad and then that's Bob, okay?
Yeah. He's amazing, but I mean, that even aside, back then, there would have been no way to manufacture a suit like that. I mean,
let me ask an important question here. You know that we've been, all of us, all four of us, have been doing this for quite a long time. And they've come up with so many new people that's in habituation. And my question to all three of you, do you think that these new people get it?
No.
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
Some get it and some don't. So, you know, I say all the time, I am not a habituator. I have never been a habituator, and I will never be an habituator. If anyone has been changed, it has been me, because I've done nothing with them to try to get them to do anything. You know, I don't even put food out. I don't do any of that. They choose to do what it is they do with me. They have chosen any of the interaction that I've had through the years. And, you know, so I consider they have changed me, you know, more than I could have ever changed them.
In that book that Autumn Williams wrote, she says the very same thing. You know,
well,
Mike and everything,
started,
he said the very same thing. And
yeah,
so
and
I have to agree with you. I've said it
you
so
know, and
many
well,
times.
And I consider myself a habituator.
Yeah.
You have to
I've
do
worked
things
with,
on the
I mean,
term.
Many people.
I never
I've
set out to
many
do
many
any
people.
Of this.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember being 3 and 4 years old, and, you know, back then, and I'm not going to say my age because then I'd have to shoot everybody, but back then, you know, it was safe for your kids to ride their bikes down to the end of the block. And at the end of our block was woods. And I would go down there and I'd sit in the woods and I knew they were there. I saw them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just my friends. I never thought it was a big deal. I didn't. And then as I got older, sporadically, I would see them here and there. And then when I moved up in the area where I'm at now, at a previous residence, they just showed up. And so I would go outside and I'd walk through the woods every day and I'd talk to them. And then, you know, 3 or 4 months went down the line, and I thought, well, you know, I'll leave treats out for them.
And do you
and
know
so
why
I've
always
them.
Said why they do that? It's because of the person itself. It's the heart.
Oh, absolutely.
It's love.
It is.
It's trust, and it's the not being scared of them, and it is respect.
It is, and I used to say to them, you know, why me? And they'd say, you're pure of heart, you're pure of heart, and that seems to be like an echo that I've heard them say of other people as well as myself. And I did feed them for a while. I mean, that turned, I mean, everybody knew I fed them for a while, but I haven't fed them, to be honest with you, in probably 3 years. Other than I had, like, some leftover melons one day, and I asked them if they wanted them out there, and they said, yeah, they did, so I put them out. But, I mean, I don't feed them anymore, and they're still there.
Yeah, okay. I kind of like to let's guide the show back to what we're doing tonight, and it's about this conference. I like to go to Arla. Arla, could you tell me about what you'll be talking about? And I know you're going to be one of the speakers.
Yes. Basically, what I'm going to do is present audio that I have. I'm going to break it down so that people know what happened prior to the audio and, you know, kind of what happened afterwards. I'll be working with my Hi Guys audio, which shows interaction between them and me. You know, and then I'm going to break down the one with Stuart where he was able to see the family and had interaction with them. Now, I have another audio that, if time presents itself, that I'm probably going to be bringing, and it's going to show them speaking English. And actually, it will show one being addressed, his name being called, that I was given his name he gave it to me via telepathy several months before this actual audio was taken. You know, there's so much controversy about them speaking and that type of thing. You know, so if time allows, I am going to present that audio too, with them actually speaking English. It is only one of many that I have of them actually speaking English, and it's not English that's garbled or anything else. It's, you know, very straightforward English. It is in a deeper tone than what we would use, but, you know, it's still English. So, you know, I've never really presented audio at a conference and really talked about it. There's a lot to the one with Stuart, a lot of things that happened before that audio was made and a lot of things that happened after that audio. I remember, you know, I never knew that I was going to even get to ever hear that audio. And then when Stuart sent it to me and told me, you know, that I could share it, I sent it to Tom. You know, the first one. And he was like, oh my gosh, you know, listening to this. And for anyone who has ever met Stuart and seen him talk about this experience, he gets that same look on his face that I saw that night and that several other people saw that night after we came back from the woods, and he will tell you that that whole experience forever changed him.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, it's a simple thing, you know, they're there, we're talking, Stuart and I are talking, I'm talking to the babies, which is normally what I do anyway, and, you know, it's just one of those things that every now and then I have to go back and listen to and just go back into that space of utter wonder that he was in and, you know, just the whole amazement of them allowing this. You know, those babies were right up front. They weren't tucked away back behind the parents. They were the closest to us, you know, 15, 20 feet from us. So that shows a huge measure of trust on their part of us being there. And of course, I didn't have anything to do with that. I didn't ask them to do that. I would not ask them to do that. They chose to do that. They even surprised me doing it. I never expected them to do that. So, you know,
wasn't there another lady who was watching a female and her baby separate from where this incident was going on with you and Stuart?
There were, that whole weekend, you know, it was not about the Bigfoot that weekend. It was about a drum making workshop. It was about 18 people coming who were respectful, people that I would have in my home. And I figured that, you know, with those people coming, that the guys would just be off somewhere else. But they weren't. There was one woman who was sitting in the front yard. She was looking off in the tree line, just kind of studying, and she went, wait a minute, that tree just moved. And, you know, and this is broad daylight. This is not like at night when it's dark. And there were several different people who, you know, had glimpses and sightings and stuff. And, of course, you know, some of them walked around and found structures and stuff like that. They're not big on structures where I'm at. I mean, you know, it's not like they have to do it. They'll do some, but, you know, not a whole lot. And if they do them, most of the time, it's definitely for a purpose. And But yeah, I mean, you know, it was not about the Bigfoot, but then I'm never in control of anything anyway. And so that's what it ended up being. I know there were a bunch that were sitting back at the fire, and they could hear this going on. And one of the guys had come back up to the fire, and I think it was Barb said, "That's not an owl making that sound." And, you know, so they knew they were probably 100 yards maybe from where we were. We had walked around the fence and down into the tree line, and the rest of them were still up by the fire. And I always say, as I do, you know, if I'm out at night around the fire or something, I might just get up and walk off into the woods. And no, I don't have a flashlight usually, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I just like to go walking out like that. You know, like I said, it wasn't anything I purposed to do. And I think one of the funniest things that came out about this, anybody who really knows me knows how funny this is, but Stuart had taken that audio and had shared it on the Bigfoot forum, and he was being eaten alive by that. And this one person, you know, came up
there.
And, he asked me, Stuart came and asked me, "Will you come on that forum and help me?" And I said, "Stuart, I gotta pray about this. I can't just, you know, come do that." So anyway, I think it was the next day I went on there. There were like over 10,000 posts on that one thread, all about just this one thing happening. By the time we finished that, I had people who had given me a really hard time,
yeah,
message me privately and tell me, because of how respectful I had spoken to everyone there, that if they were ever going to believe something like this, they would believe me because of the way I talked to other people on that thread. But one of the funny things that they said was this one guy said, "Oh, yeah," said, "you just rented a bunch of gorilla suits and had some people come up in there."
Yeah, right.
I don't know about you, but who has that kind of time?
Well, I wouldn't have that. I wouldn't have that kind of money to begin with. But it's just that funny that, you know, people are going to come up with stuff, you know, like that to try to say,
it's,
you know,
jealousy.
This is not true. Well, I'm not even concerned what it is. It's, everyone has a right to their opinion. It doesn't make any difference,
yeah,
who they are. I don't have a problem with that. They can say and do what they want to, but I'm never ever going to be disrespectful to anybody.
No,
or speak
no, absolutely.
To them. It's not in my nature to do it, and so, you know, I just wouldn't. But, you know, that I want to bring that to this particular conference. You know, a lot of people have called me the Queen of Woo in the past, and the interesting thing about that is, yes, I know about the other side of them, but I have had so much physical, flesh and blood, face-to-face experience with them for 60 years. I'm no young spring chicken. I've known about this for a long time. But it's just that thing of everybody has a right, you know, and I don't have a problem with other people having an opinion. Sometimes I have a problem with their opinion, but I don't go after them and tell them, "You can't say that, and you can't do this, and you're crazy," and, you know, all this other stuff. It's just not in my nature.
Yeah, there's too much of that in this field as it is.
Sure.
Yeah. So anyway,
I always tell everybody, I just tell everybody that I'm, you know what, I am not here to prove anything. All I can tell you is my experiences. If you haven't had those kind of experiences, I hope that you have them as well. And then
well,
you can make up, you know, your own thoughts on it. But I'm not out to prove to anybody.
I had that.
Well,
I
never have been, you know. So proof is out there. If you want proof, anyone can prove this to themselves. It is so simple. Put yourself where they are. Be respectful. And I've worked with too many people who have changed their thought process. Their paradigm shifted. They began to have sightings, interaction, and things. It's such a simple thing to me. It's not like it's hard, you know, even though I hear people say all the time, I've been in the woods all my life and I've never seen anything, you know, and I say, well, let me go to the woods with you and we'll just talk about things and we'll look at things. And that'll tell you if they're in the area. And I'm not talking about mind speaking to them and asking them, you know, are you guys out there or whatever. I'm just looking at the place where they live. And
well, if you got the experience, Arlo, you can actually feel them. You don't have to, you know, telepath. You can feel them. You know if they're around or not.
Oh, true. Well, people do that all the time. How many people do you hear say, when I walked in there, man, I had this feeling? Well, yes, you have that feeling if, you know, they're there. Whether you understand that in that mode and no, that's not telepathing or anything else. It's just, you know, being in their area, you know, where they are. So
well,
it's,
and I
just be among
I think too but I think too, we all know, you know, they decide when those interactions are going to take place. And if they don't feel, even though you may feel in your own heart and mind that you're ready for these interactions, if they don't feel that you're ready for these interactions, it's not going to happen.
No, they're not.
It's on their terms. I keep saying that.
Yeah.
It is. And when you go into the woods, especially for, well, and especially for people that are new in this field, and we all started out being new. I mean, everybody does. And
exactly. I've never been new.
Well, this started with me when I was little, but I'm just saying, I mean, as far as the learning curve goes, you know, everybody starts somewhere. But I think, too, when you go into the woods, if this isn't something that you've grown up with, if this is something that you have heard about and heard other people talk about, now you want to try to experience yourself, and you don't have somebody that's had a lot of experience with it go into the woods with you, it's possible to overlook a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you may go out and say, boy, I didn't have any experiences, where in actuality, there were subtle ones that were there. You just didn't know. And that's not anybody's fault. Everybody has to learn, and it's a process. But, I mean, you can go out and you can miss a lot of things.
Yeah. I like to get back to our talk about the conference here for a minute, if we could.
We keep getting sidetracked, but it's there.
Tom, you're going to be one of the speakers too. I understand. Could you tell us a little bit about your presentation, if you would?
Well, you know, I've got a presentation I'm putting together, and I often wonder why I put one together 2 weeks before the conference, because it all gets changed the night before anyway. But we're going to be talking about the subject of the Patterson-Gimlin film. And we're going to start out by just asking some logical questions. Like, if I were going to do a hoax film, and I lived in the middle of the Pacific Northwest where these creatures reportedly lived all around me, why would I drive over 600 miles away from home to do the film?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Okay, and if I were going to hoax a film, why would I use the last 24 feet of a 100-foot roll of film to do it with?
Okay.
Wouldn't it make sense to have a fresh roll of
I agree. These are two logical questions. That's the problem. When people don't think logically, they jump to conclusions. And, you know, and that's the good thing about Tom doing this in this manner, is it does get people to stop and think logically about how something happened.
Well, you know, I found out that most research, if I do research, I don't go out and look for them. I go out and look for evidence just because I enjoy that. But I have found out that most research is just common sense. And that's what they are. They are common sense.
Well, I think people try to nitpick it and overanalyze it.
Mm-hmm. People, they're out there beating the bushes trying to analyze something, and guess what? They're not a primate psychiatrist. There is no such thing. So quit getting out beating the bushes.
I mean, look at it in the simplest form and then go from there, because generally the simplest form, you're going to find a closer amount to the truth. Instead of looking at this film and saying, I'm going to disprove it. I'm going to be the one that disproves it.
Yeah,
how about
just
look at it?
That's ego talking.
I mean, absorb it. Look at it for what it really is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what kind of costume you have, especially back when this film was made. You cannot get the muscles to flex in that manner. And I think anybody that's actually really seen the forest people will be the first to tell you one of the main things that they notice are the way these muscles flex. The first time I saw one up close, it blew my mind.
Sure.
And that seems to be one of the few things people focus on.
Yeah. I want to get into this Mr. Mudd. He's from California, I believe. He owns that museum out there in Willow Creek, if I'm not mistaken. What's he bringing to the table?
You're talking about Bill Munns? No, he doesn't own that. Mike Rudd owns a museum down in Central California. The one in Willow Creek, is Al Hodgson. That's his bailiwick. Bill Munns is a Hollywood creature
very,
maker.
Very nice man.
Very nice, yeah. Very intelligent.
I spoke to him a couple times, and he's very nice.
Yeah. He's consented to come and speak to us. Like I said, he's appeared on, I believe it was, at any rate, one of the National Geographic Channel specials on Sasquatch, where they were attempting to present both sides of the issue. And they gave him a first-generation copy of the film in Patricia's home, Patricia Patterson's home, and he was able to dissect it, basically, frame by frame by frame. And he created the first really great stabilization, and probably still one of the best ever. And he's able to do things with that film that nobody else has ever been able to do, like break it down enough to be able to see her breast. And then he went back and did got grant money and did a test, scientific examination of that fact, using the materials they used for prosthetics back in the 1960s. If they were going to make a prosthesis breast, like for Kathleen Turner in The Stepford Wives, pardon me, Kathleen Roth, Kathleen Turner was somebody different, but where they aged her and they used prosthetic breasts as part of that aging process, what he found was that all things that they used for prosthesis of the breasts in the 1960s did not move under those circumstances. They were too rigid. There was no fluidity to them. Only when he used the human subject did he get the fluidity of the breast in order to jiggle when it stepped down. Okay? Now, Bill's also gone through the same baptismal fire we all have on Bigfoot Forum. Okay, they called him everything but a gentleman on there. And again, on my presentation, the first picture of my presentation comes up, and here's a picture of a gorilla, and the question is asked, how come nobody has ever claimed he's a man in a suit? Think about that. For 1 minute, there are a million pictures of gorillas. Not one has anybody ever looked at and said, that's just a man in a suit. That gorillas aren't real. Why? What's the difference?
You know, that's something to think about.
Yeah, it is. It's the heart of this whole controversy.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond something to think about. It's the heart of this whole controversy. Why can we accept this as real and natural and true, but not accept Patty?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's amazing. I also want to get involved with this Ron Moorhead. I understand he's going to be a speaker also. Is that true?
Yes, let me finish my thought here.
Go ahead.
Roger and Bob finished that film, some of the first people they offered it to were scientific institutions. They were told, Sasquatch is a myth. Therefore, any film purporting to show Sasquatch has to be a myth as well. They would not even look at it. Now, that's your open scientific mind. Coalition for Science and Reason.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Now, Ron's going to be there. Ron's bringing whoever knows what Ron's going to bring, because he always amazes me.
Awesome.
One of the true gentlemen in this field. But I know Ron's coming, his daughter's coming. And if you want an interesting story, get her to tell you about her first experience seeing one of these. It'll blow your socks off. Okay? But Ron has, the story. Ron was hunting in camp many miles back in the Sierra Nevada Mountains, somewhere about halfway between Yosemite National Park and Lake Tahoe, many, many miles to get there, and had these creatures show up around their camp year after year up there for a while, and they recorded them. He even brought in a skeptic newspaperman to disprove what they were seeing, and he never could. They sent the recordings to the University of Wyoming. They'd been verified as not being doctored, being real recordings. Okay? They've been vetted. And I'm sure you have. I have heard the same utterances. I've sat and listened to them 20 feet from me using the same that are on those tapes. Unfortunately, my other half of that equation had a prior commitment and couldn't attend, and that was Scott Nelson. Scott has done some absolutely fantastic work with the recordings that Ron got. But Ron will be there, and Ron has his book out, and he's always fun to talk to. He's great to listen to, and he'll have all the time he needs on Saturday afternoon to talk about his subject.
That's fantastic. And anyway, of course, we've got the grand old gentleman himself, Mr. Bob Gimlin.
Well, we could make a whole show on just him.
Oh, well, yeah.
Between us.
Yeah, I'm perfect. I'm happy to listen to him talk.
Bob Gimlin, I'm fortunate enough, I live only 70 miles from him. So we get together for lunch quite often. And
I hope we do.
He's just absolutely as fine a gentleman as ever walked to the face of the earth. He's a cowboy. Been a cowboy all of his life, and the worst thing he can tell a person is that you're a low-down, mangy coyote, and you might have to be a cowboy to understand what that means, but believe me, that's bad stuff. Time I met Bob, he looked me straight in the eye, and he says, Tom, he says, there were three of us in the bottom of that canyon that day, There was Roger, there was me, and there was that creature. There was nobody else.
Wow.
I haven't had to do a thing to believe him since then, because I know the man. Okay?
Yeah.
I know what he is. And a finer gentleman never walked.
Well, that sounds good. I hope
let her stories about Mr. Bob Gimlin. She's had the honor and privilege of having lunch with him too a time or two.
Yeah. Well, folks, I will say this. Violet and I have had a dream of ever for coming out there forever, and our dreams come true. We are leaving on the 28th of February by Amtrak. We'll be out there March 1st at 6 o'clock in the morning at Pasco. And I've got 9 days. We're renting a car, and we're going to be hitting some people. We're going to see Kathy,
all right.
Arla, you, and I was hoping we could bring Robin, but she's got problems with her mother to take care of. So.
Yeah, you have no idea how bad I wanted to go. I want a full report from everybody, you guys. Like, I need all details.
Well, we're getting pictures, too.
I need pictures. I need details.
Yeah, I'm taking a picture with all these guys. I can't wait to stand next to Kathy. She's supposed to be short, so am I. I want to see if she's short as my wife.
Well,
I'm going next year. No way.
Kathy has to stand.
My wife is 4'11". She's 4'8" now. So we'll see.
Oh,
Kathy's a little taller than 4'8". She's probably 4'10" at least.
You have to be 4'10" just to join the club now, huh? Okay.
And I know Kathy's got, she's got to stand twice just to get up to my chest.
Sounds good.
She's not very tall, but she's got a lot of fight in her, though.
Well, that's cool. That's cool.
And she's one of my teachers. She's going to be telling us about her. She wrote a book last year, and it starts with her. She moved from California to Washington, not believing in them at all.
I tell you what, I've got a lot of new people lined up for our show that believes in the same way we do. They're new people, but boy, are they! They've been doing this secretly for years, and they're just now coming out of the woodwork, if you will. So it's going to be a very interesting year for us, I think. You know, this is going to be something else. Now, this conference is in its second year. Is that correct?
It's not an annual thing. It hasn't been. The last one was in 2012, and now this one this year. But this is the second one, and the first one was more involved. It went 3 full days of presentations, and we had a banquet and karaoke, and that Saturday night after the banquet is still being talked about. The films from that Saturday night have become quite valuable.
I have a strange question for you. Just for anybody, I just wanted to ask Tom, just to put it out there for anybody that listens to this now, later, whenever. Do people need to get tickets for this ahead of time?
No,
or can they get tickets while they're there?
I appreciate pre-registrations because it helps us pay the bills as they come up. But everything is pretty much in place now. I mean, I'm down to worrying about how many and what color marker pens I should have there. You know, that's
okay.
If they did want to pre-register,
shouldn't me and Violet register?
Pardon me?
Well, if they did want to pre-register, where would they go to do so?
The website, GhostsOfRuruRidge.com. There's a page there for the conference, and just go there, and there's sign-ups there. Find us on anywhere on Facebook, and we'll give you the link if you can't find it. And that's just a PayPal thing, and it's very, very helpful. Like I say, it's nice to do it. And
now,
but,
can you register at the door?
You can register at the door. No problem whatsoever.
Okay.
Pre-registering and registering at the door, if you pre-register, your name badge will be printed. If you register at the door, it's going to be written in the marker.
Okay.
Well, I was just trying to think of any questions anybody listening to this might have.
Right.
The
cost for the weekend is $30 a person, and I just couldn't make it any less than that. The facility we have is absolutely gorgeous. It's a Grange hall that the Grange donated to the city. It sits on 15 acres, and the city's made it into a park. It's right adjacent to the largest library in southeastern Washington. The building itself is in two levels. The upper level is the main hall, is where we're going to be holding the conference, and it's a hall with a little stage area, well lighted. Downstairs is the kitchen and lots of room there. We'll set the vendors up that want to be there for that. We have a lady coming in with her espresso machine, so there'll be lattes and any kind of coffee you want available. There'll be pastries available there, and that's just there'll be a basket there if you want to make a donation for that.
Okay, I have a question about in 2008 when I went to Salt Fork. A lot of people donated things, and then they had tickets at the front when you registered.
Raffle.
They give you those tickets, and they had drawings at the end of the show. Do they do that here?
Well, we've been talking about doing that. Quite often, the speakers and the vendors will donate something and they'll raffle it off. But I don't know. I don't know whether we're going to do that or not. I know they did that at the Sasquatch Summit out on the coast, and they had so many things that it got to be burdensome.
Let me ask you this. I was thinking about bringing one of my books called The Forest, Heartbeat of the Forest. It's a $45 book, color photos, and I was thinking about donating that if they did that.
So that would be great. I mean, we can always do that. There's no problem with that at all. We can use it as a door page. We can do it as a raffle, whatever, whatever.
Yeah. It's about 23 or so, 24, 25 researchers all over the United States. They're telling their own story in their own words, and then they're showing their photos. And
one that you sent me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. I loved it. It was really good.
Cool.
Good.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. That'd be great. We can do wonderful things there. The main thing is the purpose of this conference is getting the word out about these people. And especially
just wrote that she's going to contribute a book and some keychains and a necklace or two. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. It's gonna be a great time. We're gonna have a ball. I mean, with this crew that we got coming there, the party brings itself. I know Barb Shoup does the Squatching with Barb and Gabby videos. Barb's also one of our teachers, one of our instructors or our presenters. I don't know if Gabby's coming or not, but Barb will be there. And Sandy, her cohort, my buddy, she's our chief organizer. When we checked out the building the other day, Barb and Sandy and I, at Friday, we went into the building. And I told Barb, get a chair and sit down. We'll just turn Sandy loose, and we'll be fed and we'll be organized before we leave. And we were. That's the people we got here. I mean, she's just great people involved. It's just,
this sounds like it's going to be a big affair.
Right. Now, son, that's Friday night. We're going to start with a meet and greet. That's just the time to meet everybody. If you have books you want to get signed, that's a great time to do it. If you want autographs on your program, that's a wonderful time to do it. 3 hours from 6 to 9 o'clock is just, talking and having a good time and sharing stories if you want to. There's a few people I'm trying to convince that they should tell their story at that time, Rhonda Moorhead being one of those. And I have a video that I want to show. I have to get permission from the person that made the video first, but I don't know what it's going to take to do that. But if I can do that, we'll show just a short video. It's just a couple minutes long, but it'll take several showings of it because they won't believe what they saw the first time or the second or the fifth. But that'll be there Saturday all day long from 9 a.m. till about 5 o'clock. Will be meetings. We'll have three speakers in the morning, break for lunch, have two speakers, then take a short break, have two more speakers, then we'll take a dinner break, and we'll come back at 7 o'clock for the evening session, and that'll run till 10 o'clock.
Wow.
Then Sunday morning, we're going to have a farewell breakfast, and that's a no-host affair. We're just going to a local buffet place. They've got a private room off to the side, and they've given that to us, and we can just, you know, be our own group in there. And we'll start at 8 o'clock and run to 11 o'clock, and just people can come whenever they want to. Also, Kyle Gibson runs Columbia Sasquatch. He's a good friend of mine here. He's a landscaper here in town. He's the type of landscaper. His company has won first place award the last 4 years, I believe it is, for their landscaping on the Parade of Homes contractor shows. Okay, so he's the best. And the young man is quite knowledgeable and learning a lot, and he and I go out a lot together, and he's going to take a group of people out into the Blue Mountains.
Wow.
And of course, naturally, we have to keep that group fairly small, but he's, you know, I talked to him last night. He's figuring out exactly what he wants to do, and we discussed areas, but we can't get where, you know, to the high country then because the snow level right now is about 3,500 feet. I was up there this weekend, and that was as high as we could get, was about 3,500 feet. So the top of the mountains are not accessible. But
it's a big rascal out there. The highest one I climbed, but we lived down in the valley. Was 1,600 feet down there in Tennessee, so I had a hard time just climbing that rascal.
Well, those in Tennessee, we have those in the garden here.
Yeah, well, that's what it sounds like.
Thank you for bringing that up.
I have a little fear factor over that now.
The highest mountain in our state is a little over 14,000 feet, 14,400 feet.
My Lord, man.
That's a big rock. And then we had one that was, you know, a little over 10,000 feet that's only 8,000 now. So, So we've got some hills. Well, the entire Blue Mountain range runs 7,000 to 8,000 feet.
You know, I have a hard time when I look at a tall guy and ask him, hey, how's the oxygen up there? You think I'm going to climb that tall? Ain't no way.
Well, last year we spent a week at Godman Springs with the group, and that's at 5,800 feet. So,
I'm good.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. I mean, it's...
Now, how's the weather that's been out there this winter? Is there snow in the mountains right now or what?
Snow is in the mountains, yeah, like I said, down to about 3,800 feet level. We tried to, that was as high as we could get Saturday was 3,800 feet.
Okay.
And the roads were blocked there. But, you know, still
awesome.
Below that level, they're beautiful. We have no problem whatsoever. And, you know, we were in deer and wild turkey and elk all weekend, so we had a great time.
And, oh, by the way, I was going to tell you, too, all of you, that Kathy is on the air, but I got her muted. She can't say anything.
Hi, Kathy. I'm going to tell some stories now that I'm listening. I'm probably the only person in the world that's ever had Kathy right where you want her. That
yeah.
She couldn't do anything about it.
I've been trying 10 years. Well, here we go.
At that point, I could have asked her for just about anything in the world, and she'd have given it to me. But that's her story. To
you guys are so awful. She's going to get you.
Oh, no. It was. She got
guys,
locked
you better be careful. She still got typing fingers.
She walked up
They're
on one of the big
They're going to be flying, too, in a minute.
Yeah, she walked up on one of the big guys and got locked up. And it wasn't until after I got there that she was released and could move again. But it was, in retrospect, it was extremely funny. I'm sure it wasn't near as funny to her at the time as it was to me. But at the neatest part of that, here's both of them apologizing to one another for this incident. And neither one of them listening to the other one. Okay.
I try not to laugh. She allowed to smack me instead of hug me when I get out there.
It was cool, but it's her story to tell. So that's all I'm going to tell of it. But that happened last, a year ago June in Northern California at Elk Mountain's Rendezvous.
Boy.
But geez. Kathy, she started her research in Washington and has gone from Washington to California and lives in Oregon now. And I've had the honor of being with her several times in places.
Yes, I know that. I've read that on Facebook several times. I think that's fantastic. And, you know, she is an author now. She's written
fantastic books.
Yeah,
I was her editor, actually. She did a very good job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a real weird experience when I first met her. You've probably read about it in her book, I'm sure. It was just something. It's an experience that is just unbelievable. You talk about mental telepathy. I was inclined to call this young lady up. I never talked to her. I don't know who she was, but something told me you need to talk to her. And I called her up and told her and blah, blah, blah. And I said, I got to lay down for a while. So I laid down and my arm went numb and it started tingling. And then I started seeing images.
Mm-hmm.
And I called her back up and I told her, I talked to her, and I told her. And you know, somebody you've never talked to before, they're going to be skeptical. You know, blah, 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 yeah, okay. But eventually she went out and she, you know, what I had told her was actually truth. And there's only one way that can happen, and that is a forced person contacts you and says, hey, I'm going to show you something, and you're to tell somebody. And I believe that's what actually happened. So... And she put that in her book, and I really appreciated that. Of course, I got her story like that in my first book too, you know. And just a fantastic person. So I was glad to help her a little bit. You know, I wasn't able to help her a lot, but at least I was able to be involved with her, and it's been a great pleasure. Wow, awesome. Just awesome.
Totally understand that. The first time I think we met was at the Oregon Sasquatch Symposium in 2010 in Eugene. And shortly after that was in June, in October, she got a hold of me. They had an experience in the mountains near Mount Hood, and it was not a positive experience, and they needed some help. And so they asked if I'd come help them, and I did. And they were right. But the area we were in is the closest national forest area to the city of Portland. and it was in terrible condition. There were old tires laid in the ditches. There, we found car batteries in the creeks. Okay, it was people just, and about 2 a.m. In the morning, the night we were camped there, I started getting this really oppressive feeling, this feeling of something's not right with the world, and like I'm trying to be run out of there. And it was cold enough that night that I'd gotten in my car and had run here a little bit to warm up. It was about 2 a.m. And finally it dawned on me what was happening, you know. And I said, hey, we're here to help. We're here to learn from you, you know. And I get the vision of this. And I look in the back of the truck. It's full of garbage. We've been picking it up all day. You know, we're doing what we can as, you know, just people to do. But we had a truckload of garbage that we picked up to carry out. And then he calmed down some, okay, and was able to talk. This is not normally our home. We live further away, but the fish are in the river, okay, and that's what they were doing. They were there salmon fishing. And they were really upset by the way people were treating the grounds there. And that's what was causing the unrest. And that was Kathy and her friend Christy that brought me in on that. Forever be grateful for that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, anybody else have any questions or anything? Anything we need to be brought up by the two young ladies? Arla, you had anything to add?
No, nothing. Like you said, I just wanted to kind of think of any of the questions that the audience might have as far as the conference goes, and I think Tom addressed all that. So that's good. So if anybody that does listen and wants to, you know, go to the conference, they know how to go about it.
Uh-huh. Well, anybody's welcome. It's non-confrontational. I don't ever mind somebody disagreeing with me. I like to tell people I have never learned anything worth knowing from somebody who agrees with me totally, from those who disagree with you, and then you talk about the differences, and believe me, I have changed my opinions on many things over the years because of things I've heard from other people. But
all perspectives are always encouraged because that's how you learn.
That's right,
yeah.
And always with respect, though. The other
half
of that is, as soon as the voices go up, reason goes out the world, out the window. There is no reason with raised voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is Robin still with us?
That's me, Goofy.
Okay, well, I didn't know. Good grief, I got... Nope. Yeah, okay, I'm going to have to go back to school, learn how to count.
You're fine.
People. Kathy, I guess, is still on here. I got one person that don't look like they're on here. Arla, you still with us?
918 would be Arla.
Yeah, maybe it was Arla.
Yeah, okay, it was Arla. All right.
Okay.
I'm just curious. Good night.
Well, the conference sounds fantastic, you guys. Again, I'm so disappointed I'm going to miss it because it sounds like it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, because we're going to have a ticket raise for you, girl. You know.
Well, and then we get to hang out and pick on you guys. I would have a blast. I mean, torture you guys, you know, for a week. How much more fun can it get?
That's exactly right. I just... there's one thing about it. We do carry our own party with us. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a total great time. Come to be there. Like I said, $30 for a weekend is not much money.
That's not a bad price, though. It really isn't.
No. The idea was to keep the cost down. As a matter of fact, when I set that, I thought I had a place available to me that cost a lot less than what we got. But between the time they said, yes, you have it, the time I got to the office to sign up for it. Somebody else had picked it up. So I had to do some scrambling to find this other venue, but the venue we have is just fantastic. It's like it was
fun. I bet Violet's getting excited too, isn't she, Steve?
Pardon me?
I said I bet Violet's getting excited too.
Oh, yeah, my Lord. She's, you know, she's more worried right now because she does, she's done before, but she's done it on her own between here and Texas. And she's the one that talked me into going to Amtrak. You know, I've been on trains, but they're so doggone hard. When I was in Germany, I took a train clear across Germany and France. And those seats were so hard.
Yeah.
And the same thing when I went up into Canada. I took a train up into Ontario when I did research. And, oh, my God, those seats were so hard. And, you know, coming down those big, steep mountains, I was sliding off. I was wishing I had a seatbelt, for Pete's sake.
I took the train to California here just a few years ago, four, five, 6 years ago. And it was quite comfortable on the train. It seems, and believe me, I'm hard to fit. I'm not a small person, and I'm hard to fit. And I was quite comfortable on the train. The only thing I had about it is the mismanagement of it, and the just the length of time that it took. You know, we were coming back. We pulled into Klamath Falls, Oregon, about 1 a.m., 1:30 a.m., the train crew gets off and goes home, and there's no train crew to take it over. So we sat there at 8 o'clock until the next train crew got there. You know, that's U.S. government. You're running on tracks that are owned by the freight companies, either UP, Burlington Northern, one of those. And so their trains have right away. If there's two trains on the track, the Amtrak sits on the siding while the other one goes. So there's no reason that our rail system, rail transportation, has to be as lousy as it is. It's just that it's government run.
Yeah.
And it's like
Tom, what's the temperatures been out there where you guys are at, down there around the trading station and all that?
Oh, our temperatures here in town have been in the 50s during the day, low 50s.
Really?
Yeah, uh-huh. And, yeah, it's been very nice. It was sunshiny today, 52 degrees.
Yeah, we hit it 50s and 60s over the weekend. Now we're freezing our tail off again, but it was nice for almost 48 hours.
This coming weekend, we're supposed to be back up in the 50s again. So it's just like a teeter.
I'm hoping. It's snowing here now.
I was in the mountains this weekend, and it was sunshine and 48 degrees. Okay. And we found...
I know what the weather was supposed to be like on March 1st, and then message me, would you?
I will, I wish I knew myself. One thing about it, the weather forecasts for this area are never right.
Really?
It's a very difficult area to forecast weather for, because just slight changes in the jet stream, and it changes entirely.
I understand. Yeah.
You know, that affect us so badly, so severely. And we sit down in the basin, and it's kind of a strange area. The summer times are very, very warm, but even when it's warm, the humidity is very, very low. When it gets above 90 degrees, humidity is 14-15%.
Oh,
so
wow.
90 to 94 degrees here is just a warm summer day. It's not uncomfortable at all until it gets over 100. Then that's uncomfortable. But
that's amazing.
Well, sounds nice. Unlike here, where our weather changes every quarter of the day.
Right. Well, we live in a desert. Okay, this is desert. We average 6 inches of free, 6 to 8 inches of precip a year here. And you go, you know, 3 hours north or 3 hours west of Seattle, and the history of Seattle and rainfall. Okay, out on the coast, there's areas I can show you that get over 200 inches of rainfall a year. But that
mountain range,
running up and down the center of the state, stops storm systems. So very few of them get over those mountains. So it's wet on the west side and arid on the east side.
That's amazing. Well, have you got anybody else that's going to be on there we haven't talked about? That's going to be on the speaker.
Yes, Keith Beard, coming from Georgia. And Keith, hey, again, grew up not knowing anything about these people. And his family had an area they leased for hunting. And they started having things happen. And he didn't know what it was. They're just hearing noises, and they were having things, trees pushed over, and, the things that these people do.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no idea what it was doing it. And so he started investigating and didn't believe what he was hearing. And so now he's to the point that he now has his own teacher, too, and he's spoken to him face-to-face. So, and he has a book that he wrote last year on his experiences, and he'll have that there, too. Keith is a super good friend, even though he does drive a Chevy. I have to say that because every time I go to Atlanta, he's picked me up at the airport, and he does it in the Chevy truck, and I tease him mercilessly.
Well, it's a good thing he's a good person. And, you know, if he admits that it's a Chevy, that's the first thing, you know, be able to get him into recouping. So,
yes.
You can't hold it against him. The first, way to correct the situation is to admit it.
That's right, yes. You have to admit the problem before we can start solving it, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. But, Keith's a wonderful guy. I really enjoy him. I've been back to Georgia now three or four times, something like that, for the conference they had back there a couple of years ago, and then back for the laid-back Georgia gathering a couple of times, and that's fun. That's something to talk about, too, one day. We had 20 people in camp in October last year, and every person in camp had a face-to-face encounter. Every one of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But they're very hand-chosen people. Okay? They're respectful people. And they weren't, if they weren't, they wouldn't be there. So it's a group that they knew. But it was so funny that we hold that in a park, a county park, and we were setting out, Keith and another fellow, were setting out some sound equipment one night. And the park guy, well, what you doing? Something. Well, we're just setting out some microphones, listening to the night sound. Well, I want you to know there's some strange noises we get here at night sometimes. And, we're Sasquatch right here. Oh, then you know. Okay. So the park people knew they were there, had experiences with them. And when we were there the first time, the county park administrator came to our camp to talk to us and said, the county has some properties outside of this park that are totally private that people don't go to. If you guys would be interested in using those, just contact me directly.
Absolutely.
It's so much fun. But Keith and his lovely wife are coming out, and they were at Bremerton last year for the conference there, and we had a great time. And then, let's see, don't want to miss anybody. They're Ron and Keith. Oh, Joe Hauser. Now, Joe is from Montana. Joe is he's had many face-to-face encounters starting when he was a young person, and he has a wonderful story to tell. Share that with us. I heard Joe's story for the first time in Bremerton conference last April, and was totally impressed with him. So when he said he was available for this one, boy, we jumped on it in a second. He and Tammy have been in Arizona all winter, and they're headed back to Montana, and they're timing their trip, so they'll be here for the conference. And just to reiterate, that's March 4th, 5th, and 6th, so it's coming up, less than 2 weeks away now. And
now,
everything's
Tom,
in place. Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I have to say something
ahead
before I forget. You were
all
talking
right
about Keith, and you guys were at the conference there, and the gentleman said, well, you're researchers, so you're used to the noise that they make.
Right.
And the only thing that flashed in my mind was how far we have all come, because do you realize what we have now accepted as our normal?
Yeah,
I mean, really, this is what our normal has become.
Yeah. It's you know, and people, too, are easier to talk to. I'd like to have a dollar for every conversation I've ever had that started with, I've never told anybody this, but.
I get that a lot. I had a friend of mine that's a researcher come here, and he comes periodically every now and then, and he had came to my home, and this is a few years ago, and everything was just, it was totally crazy. We had him running through the yard and all night long and all day long, and the babies were coming to the house, and I mean, it was just, you know, mass chaos. And so he had come up for the weekend, and I didn't allow very many people to come to my home because they did have the babies out all the time. You know, I thought I wouldn't want, you know, strangers around my children. I'm sure they wouldn't either. So anyway, he had come up and he said, you know, he said, I'm a devout Catholic. I like to go to church every Sunday. He said, so I think if you don't mind, he said, I'm going to go into, I live in a very small town. He said, I'm going to go into town on Sunday morning and go to the Catholic church there. And I said, well, you know, by all means, go right ahead. So he comes over afterwards, and he said, boy, you can really tell when you're in an area that has an awful lot of forest people. And I said, why? He said, I'm standing there after the church service is done, and he said, people are saying hi. I don't recognize you. And he said, well, I'm up here because I do research on the forest people. And he said, a handful of people turned around and said, oh, you know what? You get used to them up here. They're everywhere.
I think there's more. I think there's more Sasquatch people in Southeast Oklahoma than there are human people.
I know. And he was like, it was just so refreshing that nobody thought he was crazy. Nobody looked at him with shock. You know, they were just like, oh yeah, they're everywhere over here. Not a big deal.
That's not
you know
the truth. Yeah, I will have to give that TV show credit for one thing. They've made it easier for people to come forward with their stories. You know, for so many years, people just wouldn't talk about what they'd seen.
Yeah.
I know. I would get constantly either emailed or Facebook messaged and say, I just want somebody to listen. And really all these people needed was to be able to download. And be told that, you know what, you're not crazy.
Right.
You know, these things.
You got to understand that for seasoned researchers like us that have been doing this for years, that is our main job, is to listen to people and to reassure them that, look, we're here for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've got probably, I could give you a list of maybe 50 people right now that I stay in contact with because of that reason, and they'll contact me and they'll say, okay, this situation happened at this time, and how do I deal with this? And, you know, I don't claim to be an expert. I don't think any of us really do. But, you know, just to share.
You think you The first time you think you are, at first they change everything on you anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, they just need somebody that's going to listen to them and help think it through and find the best course of action.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I think if more of the negative side of this field were to try to focus more on working all together, I think we'd get a lot more accomplished. You know,
you're absolutely right. You know, you were talking about proof a while ago. That's one of my basic tenets, is I can't prove anything. All I can do is offer evidence. It's up
to and
you
that's
what level of evidence.
That's what I tell people. You know what? I would never presume to go to you and say, you're going to believe what I tell you. Absolutely not.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm not going to try to prove it. If you want me to share my story with you, if you want me to show you the evidence I have, if you want me to tell you things that I've seen or witnessed or had happen, I can do that all day long. But I'm not going to try to sway your mind one way or the other.
Yeah.
That's why it's your mind. You're going to decide on your own. You know, I can't tell you everything in the world because I don't know it. If
now,
you want to ask me a question.
Let's stress one fact about what you're saying. You know, it's great to say that, but you also need to stress that as long as you respect what I say, you know, there's a lot of they get involved and they want you to tell their story, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're this and you're that. And that's just kind of stuff that we don't tolerate, you know, especially during
the Well, and I agree. You know, if I start getting that, I generally will say, then you know what, we need to respectively just step away.
Yeah.
And when you want to talk to me like the human being that I know that I am, you don't have to agree with me, but you can speak to me like a human being, then we're all good. If that's not going to be the case, then we just need to separate now because I'm not going to tolerate it from you, and I wouldn't want you to tolerate it from me.
Right.
Exactly. You know, I've had especially...
down to 6 minutes. We need to get back to whatever is left for Tom to tell us about the show. Could you tell us the dates? So people have got a little bit more idea when this thing's going to happen.
Okay, March 4th from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, we'll have our meet and greet. Then Saturday, March 5th, we will start at 9 a.m. and we'll run till 10 p.m. With breaks for lunch and for dinner. And the area where we are, you can't walk to the nearest restaurants, but they're not far. They're just a few blocks away. And you have a good supply, good quantity. We're a decent sized town, so it's not like you're going to starve to death or anything. And I think I can bear witness to that. You look at me and tell that. Then Sunday, Sunday is totally informal and off the shelf. We're meeting at any time from 8 to 11 o'clock for a farewell called it a farewell breakfast and. That's just going to be an old country buffet, and we have our own little room there to gather in. And about 9 o'clock, Kyle will be taking a group, whoever wants to go, out into the mountains, and they can go as long as they want and leave when they want. That's just something that he wanted to do for the people. As far as the mountains themselves, I was there this weekend. We found a trackway up the side of a cut bank that the tracks were 17 inches long. The step was 41 inches. That was from toe to toe. They were impressed 7 inches deep into the soil.
Oh, wow.
I happen to know the individual that did this.
Mm-hmm.
The neat thing about this, I was with Barb Shoup from watching with Barb and Gabby and Sandy Nelson, and Barb was going to take close-up pictures of the tracks, very definitive pictures, and they decided she wasn't. Her iPod quit working, just flat quit working, would not turn on. Okay? That absolutely would not do it. Sandy says, oh, I'll get some pictures. She gets over there, and her camera says the battery's exhausted. Change batteries. Put them in before we left that morning.
Tom, I have a real quick question before we have to get off air for you.
Hmm?
And I'm sorry, I'm not trying to interrupt. I thought the people listening might want to know as well. Are you going to have any of these people that are speaking at the conference recorded where you can put a link on to listen to it a later date for the people that can't go?
I hadn't. I hadn't thought about that. I do have a fellow that did a video recording last time, and that worked out very well. We should get an audio recorder, make sure that it's on audio. And just like the audio that Paula is going to be using, she sent that to me, and I found a program online and was able to convert it to an MP3 file. And that's
okay.
She's used that, and maybe we'll do that again too. I will make sure it gets recorded.
Okay, yeah, I apologize. I wasn't trying to interrupt you. I know we were getting pushed for time, and I wanted to get that out there. Because I'm sure, you know, for the people that can't go to it, namely myself, it would be nice to know that possibly there's a link for it.
We're down to 2 minutes, so I'm going to kind of close the show down a little bit. First of all, I want to say thank you for doing the show with us tonight, all of you. We had a good time. I had a lot of information out there, and I think we did a very good job. Stone Graphics is back on the air. We'll go back on the air once a week. Try to come on a Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Of course, we're allowed to do any kind of anything we want whenever we need to reschedule somebody. We got up to 2 hour shows. We've been doing this now for close to 10 years. And I think we did an excellent job tonight. I had a lot of fun. So I'm going to say, I'm going to sign off, and I'm going to let you guys sign off too. So,
okay.
Steve Abney, thank you for being on the show.
I just want to say thank you very much for having me, and I hope to see everybody there. This is going to be so much fun. You know, recordings are fine, audio is fine, video is fine, but the feeling is being there, okay? And rubbing elbows, talking to people. You hear the most wonderful stories come out of there, the most wonderful pictures that somebody has that says, look at this, I saw this, what do you think of it? And the story is beautiful. Come see it. You'll enjoy it. March 4th, 5th, and 6th.
Your turn.
I just wanted to tell everybody, thank you for letting me be part of your night. I enjoyed it. I hope everybody else enjoyed it as well. And we'll talk to everybody soon.
Yep. Thank you, and good night from Stone Graphics, folks.
Night.